Well, the Summit County Council made two appointments for the Stuyvesant Basin Planning Commission in the studio with details about that, as well as the rest of the meeting agenda. I have Council Member Glenn Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council reappointed Melina Stevens. A new planning commissioner is Crystal Simmons. Why did the council choose Crystal?
Crystal has a really amazing background in planning and environmental issues. When we looked at her resume, she was, you know, even before we started interviewing people, her resume was twice as long in the areas that we were concerned about that anybody else. So she's really super qualified, and we're really happy to have her on the Planning Commission.
Okay. Let's see. You're headed down to the state legislature after this. You ran unsuccessfully for a seat on District 54. Is that something you still have ambition for, to serve in the Utah House?
Zero interest. I'm having a good time on the county council. I think we're getting some good things done in the county, and we have some area. You know, I'm taking my legislative efforts out by lobbying the legislature for the county. I've been down there one or two days a week during the entire session.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the renewable energy plan you're working on with Rocky Mountain Power. Tell us what it is and what the status is at this point.
The status is we're still waiting for final wording that we can agree on with Rocky Mountain Power. We're there on about 95% of the wording. There's one hang-up on essentially legacy costs in the future that we have to nail down. And I talked personally to the lobbyist for Rocky Mountain Power yesterday and got a different version as to of the legislation as to what I had read in the bill. So our staffs were working on that yesterday. Sustainability staff from Summit County, Park City, Salt Lake City, and some of our advisors, and with Rocky Mountain Power to hopefully work out the last details.
So what is it going to do?
What it's going to do, it's going to allow the three city and county entities to go to 100% renewable energy over about a 10-year period as Rocky Mountain Power builds out renewable energy resources for us. And that will require them to retire some of the coal assets that are in their fleet.
So what do you need legislation to do that?
Because it might cost a little bit more initially, although I suspect...
For Rocky Mountain?
To create that renewable energy portfolio. And there's the issue of dealing with legacy costs on the coal plants that we shut down. That was one of our early sticking points. We think we've got that pretty much worked out. And it requires legislation because this current utility legislation in Utah says that the utilities are required to provide the absolute lowest economic cost to the user, which is a reasonable request for the utility.
Yeah. And again, this is just impacting what, Salt Lake, Moab, and Park City?
Yes. But in the future, for a period of time, there's a likelihood that other cities and counties might be able to join. But again, that's in the legislation. It's not final yet, so I can't talk about details on that until we actually have numbered legislation that all of the public can read.
All right. You're not hearing much that's definitive about any tax reform bills yet. Is Representative Tim Quinn keeping you in the loop here?
We had lunch with Tim last week, and he was pretty closed-mouthed on exactly what's happening. The details aren't out yet. It's a really thorny issue. The general idea is to expand the sales tax base to services and reduce the overall rate. But that's going to create incredible amount of winners and losers around the state in terms of sales tax collections. One example that was given to me was you take Salt Lake County. A lot of lawyers in Salt Lake City, a lot of car dealers in the towns south along, just outside of Salt Lake City. So if they reduce the sales tax rate on cars and raise the sales tax, you know, create sales tax on lawyers, there's going to be incredible winners and losers there. How they deal with that, I have no idea. And I think that's what's causing a delay in trying to come up with a solution. But Tim says he thinks we'll have something to look at within the next week.
So my understanding was that the big concern with Summit County was the notion of changing the formula of, point at, you know, point of sale versus population.
Absolutely. Our biggest concern, it would be in a separate bill, changing point of sale versus population. And we haven't heard anything definitive come out on that, but we are definitely against that, as are pretty much all the resort communities and communities that have a lot of commercial activity.
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, given that Tim Quinn represents also Wasatch County, where we're going to build one of the largest resorts.
He doesn't have any impact on the point of sale versus that's in a separate bill.
Right. But even looking at just the services bill, when you talk about a resort, that's what a resort does, is provide services.
Yeah. I suspect that ski lessons will be taxed in the future if they go forward with that type of project.
Okay. We'll see if we can get him on
we'll
and
see what
explain
happens.
The...
I don't think he's going to tell you anything until the bill actually is numbered and comes out.
Sees the light of day.
We had a half-hour lunch with him last week, and... he said, well, this is the spectrum we can talk about, but...
All right. What about the bill that would allow for communities to split off from their existing county?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that in the UAC meeting this morning, starting at 10 o'clock. And in my opinion, and in Summit County's opinion, that would be a disastrous bill for the state. It would allow wealthy communities around the state to essentially secede from a county and leave the poorer parts of the county to, you know, fend for themselves. Right now, the legislation that we have requires both a vote from the section that wants to secede and a vote from the entire county to approve any type of new county. Then it has to be approved by the legislature. The proposed legislation would just allow any community to essentially secede. We could wind up having, you know, 100, going from 29 counties to 150 counties overnight if something like that passed.
Yeah, but it's one of those bills you're like, oh, no way, and then it's like it gets passed. I mean, it's like, how did that happen?
Well, we'll see. the legislature has had a tendency to do crazy things at times, so that's one of the reasons we go down there and monitor activities every week and make our voices heard.
Let's see. What about the bill to ban on plastic bags?
Yeah, apparently that's making a reappearance. We all managed to kill it last year. One of the reasons it was killed last year was because the person that put forward the bill had personal interest in bag manufacturing. He's gotten somebody else to propose the bill this year. Whether that's going to make it any better, to be determined. It failed fairly decisively last year. And since then, I'm not sure if this is good or bad for a prospective bill, several more communities have joined the bag ban.
Let's see, a few students visited the county council last week. What's your opinion of a plastic bag ban for the county?
I think it's something we could consider. Let's see what the legislation is first. The legislature may preclude us from doing that, but I think it's certainly something we can talk about. If you go out to our landfill during a windy day, you can see the effect of plastic bags on our environment. They're all over the place.
Let's see, you were visited by Deer Valley's Chief Operating Officer Todd Shallon. You asked him about two items specifically. One, can the resort get zero generation of food waste? And what can the resort do about parking and transit? So let's take on the food waste, zero.
Yeah, they have generation. They have a company now picking up their food waste and composting it. And one of the things the county is thinking about in the future, we've been approached by some investors who might be interested in providing building a digester, a commercial digester in Summit County for food waste. So we'll see how that develops. We may have something that we can help him on that particular.
Okay, and then when you asked him about parking and transit, what were you specifically asking?
Well, specifically, if you look at the days where we have gridlock coming out of the resorts, Deer Valley is a prime contributor to that, as is Park City. The transit system works well as long as the buses can get through the roads, but if we have too many cars in the parking lots trying to get in and out at opening and closing, that's what really shuts down the viability of our bus system. The other factor is that to get to Deer Valley, he pointed this out, and I've noticed this also from a county standpoint. You take either two or three buses from, depending upon where you are in the county, to get to Deer Valley. So it makes it more difficult for public transit to serve Deer Valley. I think that's something we have to deal with that collectively. You know, better transit options, and we need to not create more parking places, maybe restrict parking or make it more expensive to park at the resorts. But that issue is up to the resorts. They own the parking lot.
Yeah. In terms of the meetings between the county and the city talking about the future of transit, are you part of that, or is that just at a staff level?
I am not currently part of that. I was on the JTAB last year. I'm just an alternate this year. Kim Carson and Doug Clyde are the two members of the JTAB this year, and they and Tom Fisher and Caroline Rodriguez will be the main participants in those discussions.
All right. And then Park City's initiative to install 100 electric car chargers. If we want to get people out of the car, why are we providing free electricity for them?
Well, that's also an environmental issue. The congestion occurs at peak periods, and we need to get people out of their cars at those periods. But for the rest of the year, encouraging people to get into electric cars is a good thing. In fact, I was coming out of our council meeting in Colville last night, and there was a person passing through the area that needed to charge, and they found on their app that we had some level 2 chargers at the courthouse, and they were plugged in as we were leaving. And that's a necessary infrastructure if we're going to change from internal combustion vehicles to electric vehicles. And that is a incredibly vital piece of environmental policy if we're going to reduce our carbon footprint.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Oh, I can talk for probably another half hour on the various goings-on in the legislature right now, but I don't have time. I need to get down and talk to a few people.
Okay, Glenn, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, education funding, one of the state legislature's number one priority. There have been hundreds of bills filed during Utah's legislative session that affects educators and students. In the studio now to discuss some of those bills, I have the school district's business administrator, Todd Halber. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this week, the Public Education Appropriations Subcommittee forwarded its budget recommendations for approval. We're talking about a 4% increase in the WPU per pupils funding, which translates, I guess, to about $128 million. So what does that look like for the Park City School District in terms of hiring teachers or lower class sizes or paying increased insurance costs?
Sure. So that 4% increase will bring about $600,000 into the school district. And we've been deep in our budget conversations since December, and we had anticipated a 4%. So when the governor had announced 4% and now the appropriations committee is talking 4%, we felt pretty confident that we had guessed well and are building that into our budget right now.
Okay. So in terms of the budget, what are you looking at in terms of increased insurance costs? I mean, does a lot of that money just go away instead of paying increased salaries?
So it's not so much that it goes away. What it is we had a three-year contract for all of our employee groups, so the teachers, the ESPs, and the administrators. And we had forecasted that the WPU would grow by at least 2.5% each year. So this is positive news. You know, being north of 2.5% means that we have all the financing that we will need to carry on that. So it doesn't replace anything. It's actually supporting what we had decided 2.5 years ago.
Okay. In terms of your costs, so I mean, what are you looking ahead of, and in terms of impacting the budget?
So moving forward is looking at making sure we have the right staffing levels for our student health. So we're looking at, you know, school counselors. And there's a bill out there that provides about $30 million for school counseling. So we're excited to see that move through. We're hoping it gets funded. It's on the appropriations list. So we're hoping that will get through. That will help support school counselors in each of the schools. Looking at special education services, making sure we have the full continuum of services in place. and then looking at restructuring opportunities as we have a new superintendent come on, and looking at how we can be more efficient and effective as an administration in the district.
Yeah, so would that school counselor money trickle down to Park City School District, or is it for those most needy districts?
So it is on a, as I understand it, on a grants basis. It's yet to be fully fleshed out, but we will be, you know, front in line and asking for the dollars where we have students in need in our area as much as anywhere else in the state.
All right. Also, Senator Ann Milner looking to make up some funding that would have come from last year's Our Schools Now initiative, which was renegotiated by the legislature, and then the gas tax proposition that failed in November's election. So talk to me a little bit about this Senate Bill 149.
Sure. So Senate Bill 149 is basically the structure that would have been brought in place had the proposition passed. And so it designs the monies to be distributed at the school level for a principal to organize what's called a school success plan. That plan falls within the school board's framework of structure so that schools can improve in their academic scores and performance. So it really puts all the pieces in place that are missing. And it also opens up a pathway for additional dollars. The sales tax or the gas tax dollars won't be coming in. So there's a piece of money that the Appropriation Committee set aside on Tuesday night, about $35 million, to come into the teacher student success account to accomplish then these school success plans. So there's some money coming with it, and we have structure now on how that money should be administered.
So it's new money. It's not coming from the wealthier districts like Park City that would then just be divvied out to
them. Yes. So at this point, the $35 million is income tax. So that's new money coming into the school district. There's another piece of money that's tied to last year's House Bill 297, which was the state's tax restructuring bill. And what that did is it created a little piece of basic levy money that comes into the teacher and student success account also. So there's money that comes from that will be new money. And that's the part that we feel here in Park City specifically is that's additional property tax that goes into that account, but it doesn't come back to us in the same proportion that we put it in.
So other than that, are we seeing any other attempts at equalization?
Nope, not that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. So what would that be that if that were to be approved? I mean, what would kind of impact would that have on Park City?
Sure. So I have just really rough numbers because I'd only seen the $35 million number on Tuesday night. Right now, we're upside down about $400,000. So there's money from the TSSA that happened this school year that we're in right now. There's about $65 million, and we participate in that with property tax. There's probably another $18 million new property tax that will come in, but then there's $35 million in income tax. So when you start to look at that, we're probably still upside down, but not to the same extent. It will probably be a couple hundred thousand upside down. Upside down meaning that we receive less money than we put into it through our property tax.
Okay, but it doesn't wipe away that increase of $600,000 from the WPU.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Let's see. The legislature had formed a commission on school safety after that mass shooting there in Parkland, Florida. Some legislation has come out of that commission's finding, including bills looking at school safety regarding operations and securities. So how are we doing in terms of safety? Have we met all of those items that we have set out to do?
So we're on track with that. We've remodeled the front entranceways of the elementary schools. We have visitor check-in systems in place at each of those schools. We have completed the design work for the secondary schools on their front entranceway remodels. Funds are set aside to start accomplishing that. So now it's just a matter of pulling together the contractors and subcontractors to get the work going.
So, are those effective? And the reason I ask is because I just walked in a side door and walked right in. I mean, and nobody asked me anything. I had to go to the office because I had to find out where I was going. But still, it was...
At a secondary school or an elementary?
It was at the high school.
At the high school, yeah. So, in that case, we haven't put all those measures in place. And so, we have a lot of behavioral management and change in attitudes that will need to take place at all the schools. Because there are those who are helpful. You know, they see someone outside and say, they want in, I'll let them in. And we have to change that mindset that, the way in is through the front entrance. It may be inconvenient, but that's for security purposes. We need you to come in through the front doors and check in. So there'll be some changes in that as well.
So what sorts of improvements still need to be made in terms of safety?
So obviously the front entry check-in systems at the secondary schools, we're looking at locking systems for the exterior doors so that from a single point you can lock all the doors, as opposed to having to go and make sure a door is pushed shut or things of that nature with a crash bar and things of that security level. We're looking at having that electronic so that we can control those types of systems, and also putting in some more security cameras for areas that aren't covered as well as they should be.
Okay, but we've got all the fencing in.
Yeah, yep, that's all in place, and we're learning how to work with that, making sure we have those gates opened at the right times and closed at the right times and things like that.
All right. Let's see. Some Utah schools have a high opt-out rate for the standardized testing that the legislature trying to incentivize by taking the test. That's through House Bill 118. Park City High School is one of those schools with a very low opt-in rate. I guess nearly half of our students not taking the test. So if this bill passes, it would those students would be required to opt in?
So it's still an optional in the concept that a teacher can put an incentive in place. So if an incentive isn't put in place, then you're still free to opt out. So we'll have some policy conversations as to how that might be implemented at the school district, whether the teachers will be expected to have a standardized test as part of their grading structure, because the grading structure is that new incentive. If you want to improve your scores in school or in your classes, then you can take the test, and that's a means by which you can do that. And so the question then becomes, how rigorous will we make that for our teachers? Will that be a required part of their curriculums? Will it not be? And that's yet to be decided. But it's a movement in the right direction to help gather that information.
So another bill, there's House Bill 198. This was approved Wednesday in the House. It would eliminate letter grades from the state's public school report card. Is the district taking a stand on that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. And I guess that this, we're talking about not the letter grades that students receive. This is the school grade.
Correct, yeah. So at the end of each academic year, a grade was assigned to the schools based on a set of criteria and student performance. So that structure is gone, so the letter grading is gone. In its place will be more of a dashboard where you'll have different academic performance elements that an individual can pull up on a website and see how the school is performing on a number of fronts.
And this is still the same testing that we're talking about that we need to incentivize the students to take? Is that?
That's part of it. That's not the only thing. So there are other performance elements within a school that are even outside of the standardized testing. That data was obscured in getting a single grade. You could find it if you drilled down and wanted to understand how well a school was doing. And instead of having to drill down, that information will be what's available up front.
Okay. The school board has been talking about going to what it's calling, I think, SBI, Standard-Based Initiative. That would do away with student grades, then. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I'm less versed in how all those systems work, but that's my basic understanding.
Okay, but that's on a student level as opposed to a school level.
Correct, correct.
All right. In terms of teacher retainment, Governor Gary Herbert pleaded last year for folks to become teachers. You're keeping tabs on House Bill 130. That would have teachers do exit interviews on their way out.
Yeah, so we do exit interviews, and we have some of the information. This just makes sure that we capture all that information and then report it up to the state level. So right now we capture it. We understand our dynamics in our area, but we're not reporting that out to the state legislature or to the State Board of Education. This bill just make sure that those surveys take place and that they get communicated up the line.
Yeah. What would they read? I mean, if they came from Park City, too expensive to live here?
No, most often it's a spouse may be relocated, and so the family is moving out. We have retirements. We have individuals that want to change locations, and so they're moving out not because the system is poor, but their personal lifestyles and expectations and goals are moving elsewhere. So there's those types of activities. And so it's not that someone's discouraged. I'm sure that's out there too, but that's not the primary driver.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing, you know, so to collect this information, it would be like, well, there's nothing we could have done anyway then, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's just a matter of passing it on. You know, we have a knowledge set, we can pass it on. Whether we need legislation to accomplish that, okay, you know, maybe that makes us do it more efficiently, but we're capturing it. Typically at our board meetings, when we present the new hires, for the board to approve, there's a note as to the reason for exiting our system. And so we've been capturing it. We've had it all along. It's just a matter of passing it along.
State also had made it easier to get new teachers into the profession without having to go through and getting an education credential, or at least to be able. Park City, I think, but you don't. You require a credential before you hire them.
Yeah, or you need to be on a path to receive that credential. So there's what's called a letter of authorization. So you might be a teacher from out of state, credentialed in that state. You come to Utah. Well, you don't have a Utah license, so you have to go through a process to obtain that Utah license in that time you're under a letter of authorization. So those types of pathways are still available for licensed professionals.
Okay, but you're not allowing just anybody to come and...
Yeah, we're not using those options. They're available out there, but we're not exercising those.
Okay. Let's see. Another bill you're watching is House Bill 168. This would put seat belts on school buses. Do we know that that would be safer?
It depends on the type of accident, and that's the challenge that we're in right now. The bill is coming out of some experiences in the Midwest and on the East Coast where some serious bus accidents took place, and had seatbelts been on those buses, those students would have, you know, fared better. So that's where the energy is coming from. In Utah, we have our own experience. In Juab County, there was a school bus accident in which the students, because of the nature of the accidents, were thrown forward in their seats, and so their heads were down below the seats, and a piece of debris came right through the bus, and it would have decapitated the children had they been in a seatbelt. So it's now you're looking at, well, what type of accident are we trying to mitigate and improve the situation for students on the buses? And when those stories come up, for and against the seatbelt, it becomes hard to say which scenario are we trying to protect. And so there's some calls right now to go through the statistics and see, you know, what accidents were better off because of a seatbelt, which ones are better off without a seatbelt, and let the statistics kind of weigh what the right choice is to make a bus safer or keep it as safe as it is now.
So that sounds like it's going to some study committee then.
My guess is it could go that direction. There is no fiscal note on it, so that means that the school districts would be responsible to comply with the law. And for us, that would cost about $15,000 for every new bus that we purchase. It's not retroactive, so our buses in the fleet currently wouldn't have to be retrofitted, which creates another set of problems. It's like, well, why do you have some with and some without? Why wouldn't you just do it all? And it becomes cost prohibitive to retrofit, and the representative recognized that. That's why he's trying to represent that buses purchased in 2020 and forward would have seat belts.
And then in terms of, I mean, is the school district looking at purchasing the electric buses like Park City has?
So right now we're going down the path of alternative fuels. We've done testing with CNG and with propane, and just looking at the torque of the engines and the hills that we have to drive our buses up, we opted to go with the propane solution. And so that's the direction we're going in right now. We have two in the fleet right now. We're looking at capital purchases for this next school year. We'll probably purchase another four buses, again, looking to use the propane fuel as that option and move forward that way.
I don't know. It costs a lot of money to fill my propane tank. Saying it's cheaper?
It is, yeah. For the buses, we have our own filling station set up at the bus garage, and so it is more cost effective.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think you hit the highlights.
Okay. Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome.
That's Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Halber. 8:46 now, good morning. Well, the Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association will be competing in this week's ski touring competition. It opens tomorrow and runs through Saturday at Soldier Hollow. In the studio with details, I have a member of the Ski Patrol, Kira Solomon, at Park City Mountain. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, for the uninitiated, what's ski touring?
It is a wild, obscure winter sport in the West where a horse and rider tows a skier down a course. And in this particular course, the skier has to go over, I think it's three jumps, and has to pick up rings. So the rings are suspended on these stands, and the skier has to wing over to the side and put their arm through the rings, and they have to try to clear all the jumps and not crash and catch the rings. And then they are towed quickly down this path, and the horse is just running all out. And while the horse gets to go straight, the skier is winging over to the right, going over a jump, and then winging over to the left and going over a jump. And they have to cross the finish line on at least one ski to have a time that qualifies.
Okay, so what has this got to do with ski patrolling?
One would think very little, but there is a small group of us on the ski patrol who enjoy horses about as much as we enjoy skiing, and we watched this event 2 years ago. Ski Touring Utah brought it to Soldier Hollow, and we watched this event and thought immediately, we want to do this. And so we actually started putting together a team and practicing last year, but it was a drought year, and they had to cancel the event. There was lack of snow. So when they announced the event dates for this year, we thought, yeah, let's put this together. Let's do this again. And we've got good skiers on ski patrol. So we have these talented people who are willing to be towed behind a horse going very fast and go over jumps because they're expert skiers. They're willing to do it. And then we took the patrollers who are really into the horses, and we have one patroller who owns horses herself, so she was willing to let us use her horses. And so we put together teams, and we have practiced up at H&H Ranch at an outdoor arena, and we have practiced at the Soldier Hollow practice course, and we feel pretty prepared to do this. Yeah, so we have three teams. We have one team in the novice category because it's a younger horse who hasn't really been exposed to crowds and been tested with a lot of events like this. And then we have two teams in the sport category because we're using a very seasoned horse for that particular division. And then the top most division is the pro division, and we're not there yet. This is going to be our first time competing, so we're going to see how it goes. We're really excited about it, but regardless of whether you've heard of this sport before, it is a fantastic spectator sport to watch. This and watch these horses just run all out towing skiers behind them. It is it's a hoot. We hope that people will want to watch. We also have been in contact with the organizer of the event. Joe Leverage has been willing to let us have a booth where this event will be in conjunction with our Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association fundraiser. So we will have where we pair with Wasatch Backcountry Rescue. So we'll have a booth with a table for WBR and a table for PCP Spa. And Joe Leverage also used to patrol and is, he's very interested also in the dog program. So he has talked with our patroller, Lauren Edwards, who's going to bring an avalanche dog from our patrol and do a demo for the audience on one of the days. I don't have the details of exactly when it happens, but that is part of the deal, that she's going to do a demonstration of how avalanche dogs work for the audience. So we're pretty excited about that aspect of the whole thing, too.
Yeah, I had heard that you have a dog handler on the team that actually went down to the LaSalle Mountains to help.
Yes,
Tell me about that.
She went down to the LaSalles, and Lauren is her name, and her dog, her avalanche dog, is Tucker. And Tucker actually was the one who found the body and was able to retrieve that from the site. So we're pretty excited to see an avalanche dog really go to work in a real situation where the probe line had not found this person, and they were working on the site, and he still hadn't been found, but Tucker did it.
Yeah. So this happens, as I mentioned, Friday and Saturday. Do you have the specifics, the times? And
a little bit, yes. The runs begin in the morning at 10 a.m., and the novice category will compete first. And to my knowledge, it'll go novice, sport, pro on each day. So it's my understanding that runs will start at 10 a.m. on both days and go in that order.
So is it just one run and fastest person wins?
Yes, in that we get one run each day. And yes, the fastest one wins some of the prizes. A percentage of our entry fees goes towards the winnings, and also I believe there's a belt buckle one can win. So it's they're trying to, yeah, make it worth our while for the competitors, but it's also just a really fun thing to watch.
Yeah, so maybe it's cumulative, the two run total, or
I believe so. And I apologize for being fairly new to this. I'm going to find out a little bit more myself.
So are you riding? Are you riding a horse? Or
I
are you skiing?
Am. I'm riding a horse.
Oh,
yeah. This year I am. It was just a stroke of luck. Ashley, who owns the horses, is in class and isn't able to make it to the meeting. And so she said, I need another rider. And I was happy to jump into that spot.
Okay. So how fast do you go? You have any idea?
I do. So top speed for one of these horses is probably going to be around 35 miles an hour.
Really?
Which is still pretty quick. Yeah, it's pretty fast. Now, in the novice category, watching this event 2 years ago, there are horses that don't go that fast. You know, if they're just starting out and trying it, like they might start out at a trot and then go into a slow lope, and maybe they're doing, you know, 20, 22 miles an hour, and it doesn't particularly feel that fast to a downhill skier, someone who's used to going fast on skis. But in the pro division, yeah, they're probably, you know, 36 miles an hour or something like that, and this person is flying down the course.
Yeah, well, and then as the skier's kind of getting whipped around on one of those sides, it going probably even faster.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable to see the skiers have to manage the slack in the rope, and so they'll go up and over a jump, and they'll be slack in the rope, and then they have to kind of try to manage that so then it doesn't just go tight, yeah, exactly, and just yank them down the course. So it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, I bet. So is there an entrance fee?
There is, mm-hmm. Yep. So we, and it's a different amount. Oh, sorry, for competitors versus spectators, both.
It's both first to come spectate. I mean,
yes.
How much would it cost to go in through the gate?
I believe it is $15.
Okay.
Val was looking it up last night, and I believe it is $15. I'm sorry that I'm very familiar with the team rates to register a team, and less familiar with the prices just to go and watch. But I believe that's the number she told me.
Okay. You know, you can go to skijoinutah.com and
yes.
Let me see here, buy tickets. Yeah, $15.
Perfect.
For general admission.
Thank
okay.
you.
All right. And again, you're going to have a booth there. You're going to be selling what?
Well, yeah, we'll have t-shirts and stickers and swag from both WBR and from PCP Spa. And because all of our registered teams are registered under the Professional Ski Patrol Association and at Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association. So those three teams, we're excited to give it a go.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us? How's this winter going? You guys tired of blasting snow?
Oh, my goodness. We are pretty tired, yes, but for good reason. You know, it's exciting to have such a good winter and have so much snow come storm after storm after storm, especially after last year, and so many of our years have been drought years. So it's really, it's refreshing to see a real winter and to see so much snow and feel like, oh, it truly is a great mountain town and we have to deal with this. But yes, it is tiring to come in, you know, and at 5:45 in the morning and handle avalanche mitigation and explosives and put in 12 to 13 hour days, and it makes us tired but happy.
Yeah, especially, yeah, now we're gonna go ski jour.
We're gonna go wing down a course with a horse and a rope.
And I know, and did you, I don't know if you heard the story that just came out of Heavenly about inbounds, it wasn't an avalanche. There was so much snow. The guy fell and basically suffocated just because of so much snow. So
oh my goodness,
be careful, people,
this.
Right? I mean, it's just, if you can't get back up, I mean, and you find yourself in a, he wasn't even in a tree well. He was just under the snow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Oh, man.
Well, thanks for the good job and good luck in the competition. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much.
That's Kira Solomon again with the Park City Professional Ski Patrol.